You're listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net. If you listen to the whole show today, beginning to end, you'll become the first person to ever do it. And that's something you can brag about to your friends. Unless you're Cliff, and then you don't have any. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. Crank it up and set off your airbag.
What?
Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today on the NativeTalk.net radio program. The email, if you want to be a part of the show, is podcast@NativeTalk.net. And as always, you can make comments through the Facebook page, facebook.com/NativeTalkRadio. Now, Brandon is not here today. He's actually in the Tacoma, Seattle area, closing on his brand new house. He's moving up there. And he's also going to be diving for gooey ducks this week. So instead, we've got a PhD in... What do you have a PhD in, Ms. Donnell?
I have a PhD in clinical psychology from the University of South Dakota.
Wow, you went all the way to South Dakota to study that?
I did, yes. It was the furthest I applied to go to school because it was I didn't want to be away from family, but that's where I got in, so... You do what you have to do.
That's what you do.
Came home with a PhD. That's right.
Well, that's pretty amazing. How did you like South Dakota?
At the time, it was pretty painful. You know, it's cold, and then it's hot, and then it's cold again. But I learned a lot, and I've gone back actually and visited a lot of my professors since graduating, and. My story is that I went home. It was like I was swimming upriver to kind of find myself and my purpose, which was to come back and serve my people. So it took me going all the way to South Dakota to really solidify that as a plan for me. So,
sometimes that's just what it takes. I mean, I spent 5 years in Russia and before I came back to America. So sometimes you got to leave home to realize how much you're needed there.
Absolutely. Yep.
So, and you're back in Tacoma now, right?
Yes, I am. I am back on the reservation, the Puyallup Tribe of Indians reservation that Tacoma, Fife, Milton, and Puyallup sit on top of. And I have been serving the tribe in the capacity as director at Kohwachi Counseling Center for 14 years.
Awesome. Now, the reason why you contacted me is because it is mental, May is Mental Health Month, which was started in 1949 by Mental Health America, which is the most highly recognized mental health awareness event in the nation, which I thought was interesting because I've never heard about it before. But I guess that's one of the reasons why they picked this month to release a bunch of studies and things so that people can be aware of it. The one thing that I never understood about awareness months and like awareness events is because obviously it's about something that most people know isn't good. I mean, it's not like it's a stretch of the imagination that mental disorders are a bad thing. It's something that we're all aware of. So, so people set up things like community runs or walks for mental health. They host mental health screenings, other educational events. They plan events where concerned citizens and community can come together to discuss, mental health needs and stuff. But the thing that always confused me is the people who are going to those events are usually not the people who are suffering from those. Because if you're... if you have a mental health disorder, you're probably more likely to just stay at home. So you're not going to go get screened. You're going to like stay out of the public. So how are these things helping is my question.
I think that's a great question, actually, Clifton. And it does bring up one of the themes for the national NAMI, which is the National Alliance for Mental Illness. And they also, do national campaigns every year with different themes. And their theme this year is to actually hashtag cure stigma. And so your question is perfect because a lot of times the folks who will show up at these awareness events, we will make assumptions they're doing better. They're coming because they know it's important. They're engaged. And the folks who really should be there maybe aren't as engaged. And one of the reasons we know that their folks with mental illness are not engaging in the community is for fear of being negatively judged, for fear of being seen as less than somebody else. And it is due to the misinformation about people who suffer from mental illness, that they are dangerous, you know, that they're quote unquote crazy. And so it's those kinds of misinformations and things that are, you know, and even that are in our everyday media. They love to jump on somebody had mental illness and went and, you know, did a bad deed. We have a long way to go in terms of these awareness events, in order to, you know, truly cure stigma, so that when somebody is suffering, they will, just like, you know, I like to use the metaphor or the analogy, if I broke my leg or my arm and the bone was sticking out, it was a compound fracture and my hand was hanging, I wouldn't hesitate to go to a doctor.
Yeah, but then I wouldn't also have like a stigma attached about like, well, that I'm less than somebody else, because
exactly.
If my arm isn't working, it is less than somebody else's. That's sure. Why I go to get help, so that I can sure. Return to full functionality.
Exactly. And there isn't anything that keeps you from making the obvious next step after the arm is broken to go see a doctor. It's a whole lot more complicated when you're talking about someone who's suffering emotionally, and that whole overlay of how are people going to judge me? And especially in Indian country, you know, stigma is everywhere, but especially in Indian country, it is even deeper. You know, it goes back, you know, generations. My, you know, great great grandma said, don't ever go to Kawachi because, you know, people are going to think you're crazy. That's a bad thing. So yeah. We need to overcome those, you know, those teachings that we've all heard in our either family, immediate family, or in the community. And we need to give permission to everyone.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because you said that there's a stigma that people with mental health problems are violent, unpredictable. And I've been researching and looking a little bit into this, and mm-hmm. they say that most people with mental illness are not really violent. You've got about 3-5% of violent acts are attributed to individuals living with serious mental illness. So most violence isn't being perpetrated by people who are mentally ill. But people with mental illness are 10 times more likely to be victims of violent crime than someone in the general population. And mm-hmm. that surprised me, because what are they doing out there to put themselves in a situation where they can be violently victimized?
Yeah. You know, I think that's super complicated. And, you know, a lot of our folks with mental illness, they are homeless. So that's, you know, that is definitely something that co-occurs fairly often with people with chronic mental illness. They're also homeless, so they're living on the streets, and so we know that is not an easy life, and you're not running into the most healthy people, you know. Yeah. they're
say about a quarter of
yes.
all homeless adults
yes.
mm-hmm. staying in shelters have yes. a mental illness. That's a yes. quarter of them,
right?
That's
yeah.
that's pretty serious. You also mentioned the stigma attached with Indian country, and I was
yes.
reading that they have a higher instance of mental health than any other race. They're at 28%, whereas, you know, white adults are living with a mental condition 19%, you know, blacks 18%. I mean, everybody's about the 16-18%, except for natives, way up at 28, which is surprising to me, because why is it affecting them more than everyone else? I don't know.
Well, I mean, we have some good ideas. You know, science has come a long way, even since I earned my PhD almost 20 years ago. And science wasn't looking at the impact of trauma across generations. Although I had met in South Dakota, I met some elders and also healers who said, you know, we carry the wounds. I've heard this all through my time in South Dakota. We carry the wounds of our ancestors, and I really kind of never knew what that meant. I was like, okay. But now science has actually caught up with that teaching, you know, that the elders in South Dakota, they just knew. And that we truly do, women in utero, if they experience any type of stress, and stress cortisol is released in their body, it is actually passed down into her fetus, and that fetus will then carry that stress response like through life. And so the child could have a perfectly, because you and I touched base a little bit through messaging, you know, like, I kind of don't get it. And this, you know, child can be born and never experience, you know, strife or difficulties or anything. And yet through that experience in utero, they're going to have a slightly different than normal response to stress in their lives because of what happened to them in utero. And we also know that we do carry from generations past that same similar kind of neurological pathway for dealing with stress, and it can just put us in a slight disadvantage to getting through some of the things that, we'll say, you use the word normal. I'm not sure there is a normal, but you know that normal folks can kind of see that stress through.
No, right? Normal just meaning like your average everyday person, you know, yeah, somebody who's just.
I think we're all in a continuum, and everyone has their own flavor of crazy, is what I always say. You know,
of course.
I have mine, and you know, my sister has hers, and even though we grew up in the same family, we have, you know, kind of different ideas of what that was, because we're all individuals. And
that does bring me to, you know, something that I was curious about, because, you know, everybody knows that people who are facing serious situations who've come from, you know, very stressful, you know, families, whether that's before they were born or, you know, they're living through it, they're going to be subjected to these things. We know that, you know, poverty and these things create more stressful situations. And, you know, certain areas, things are more prevalent than others. But I've never understood the people who we see so often with mental health issues. They're people who should, by all accounts, be happy. There's nothing, you know, that you can point to. And it's not like it has a, what do you call it, a serious or severe mental issue, but just a difficulty coping. And we see people who come from good families, good upbringing, they commit suicide, you know, and it's happening at, like, from what I consider, ridiculous rates. What did I have here? You had, kids doing it. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death.
Yes.
And third for people aged 10 to 14, and second for kids age 15 to 24. What on earth are children having difficulty coping with?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a complicated picture, but I think bringing up that, you know, and also suicide is the fourth leading cause of admits in the ER, you know,
really?
So it is truly happening at an epidemic rate. And, you know, I saw a documentary that was done by, oh, now I'm forgetting her name, from Como. Anywho's, she interviewed a 9-year-old child who had tried to hang herself in her bedroom.
My God.
And she was suffering because her parents were both out of the home. She was placed in her grandmother's care with several other siblings and cousins. They're in an impoverished, you know, home with little resources, and a lot of sadness, you know, in her life, missing her parents. And, you know, there's lots of reasons. I mean, we look to, who's the person who played Mork?
Robin Williams.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Robin Williams, like nobody would have guessed on this planet that he would have taken his life. Chris Cornell, you know, from Soundgarden, these people who, and seem to be living these, you know, Hollywood glamour, like what could possibly be wrong? They're the folks who are, again, they weren't seeking the help and support that they needed due to that stigma. So, you know, you have somebody who already has a proclivity, both of them did, to addictive behaviors. They both admitted to having issues with being addicted to some kind of substance. And so they were using medications given to them by a PCP rather than maybe getting some more comprehensive services to address their mental health
PCP
problems.
Like the drug PCP?
Well, most of the mental health medications for depression, anxiety, ADHD, they're prescribed by family practice docs.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, they're getting the medications, but they're maybe not getting that behavioral retraining that they need. A lot of children will grow up in systems by folks who, you know, their parents aren't the healthiest, and so they're learning maladaptive coping strategies as well. You know, so they grow up learning these maladaptive things, you know, and from the youngest age, children start to connect with the adults around their lives. And if they're inconsistent, that child's going to have a really hard time, and even a greater, more difficulties as they get older if they're not learning the healthy ways to engage mm-hmm. in their environment.
I completely agree, because a medication can only go so far, and it can only do so much. In fact, on this show, we've been talking the last couple of weeks about how to have a more successful, organized, and happy life. Having a strong purpose in life is something that I believe in. I think that you need to set goals to be future-oriented, thinking about like things that you want in the future. And if you're concentrating on what you want and setting very clear goals, it helps you make decisions today to make tomorrow's dreams a reality. Because things don't just happen. If you're looking around just at what you've got going on in your world today, you know, you're going to be lost.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and these are teachings. You know, our public school systems are changing. And have changed since, you know, I went to school, and probably since you went to school. They don't teach values in school anymore. You know, we're kind of losing our children, I would say, a little bit to technology and to screens. And that sense of purpose, I think, is the absolute, you know, you're kind of hitting the nail on the head in terms of a driver for your wellness. Because if you don't have that, you know, you don't have a driver and nothing's kind of pushing that car, right? Or what making your engine go. And I can't remember the title of the book, but they interviewed centenarians all over the world. Mm-hmm. And it was one of Oprah's favorite, like in her book club several years ago. And so the author went around all over the world and interviewed these people who had lived to be 100, full lives, you know, and let's say happy lives. And the number one thing that every single person across the globe that had survived a lifetime and were living past 100 said the number one thing that linked them all together was purposefulness.
Absolutely.
And I don't think we do a good job of helping children to find that. You know, I remember talking to teachers and people in school about what do you want to be? And when I ask teenagers today, we do a lot of outreach in our community here at the Tribe, and I work with a lot of the students at Chief Lesh Eye and students in our community and young people. And I'm like, what do you want to be? What's your dream? What do you want to be? And sadly, the most common response I hear is, I don't know.
That's sad. You know,
I don't know. We're just not doing a good job of planting those seeds.
When I was about 13 years old, and my dream was always, I wanted to be in radio. I loved radio. I used to listen to radio stations and shows all the time. And to me, it sounded like those guys were having fun. And I always said I wanted a job where I can have fun. And so I've told this story before. I used to call my local radio station, country station, I can't remember, but it's a country station out there in Sacramento. And I called them every day asking if I could be a guest on the air. And it took me 2.5 months calling them every day until they let me be on as a 13-year-old. I got to go into the studio and be on the air.
Awesome.
And when I got to college, you know, I entered an internship program, and I got to intern at KSFM there in Sacramento, and I got to be on the 7 to Midnight show when I got my own overnight show. I did a morning show down in New Mexico. So, you know, if you have that dream,
right?
If you have that dream and you're doing things to make that become a reality, you'd be shocked at how often it's going to come true, you know? And the fact that it's hard, of course it was hard. Who else would call for 2.5 months? And, you know, after that, they started having guest DJs every Friday night.
I love it. That's awesome. Yeah, you are living your dream. That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, now I manage hotels, but, you know, I still do stuff like the podcast here.
And you're doing this, you know, and I, like, way back when I was growing up, probably about that same age, you know, I my dream changed. I wanted to be a fashion designer. I wanted to be a pilot. But I was continued to make those steps, which included graduating from high school and then going to college, and you know, and then it morphed into I want to be able to help my people. That's what I could articulate going into my University of Washington for my bachelor's degree, is I want to help my people.
It's okay if dreams change. That's normal.
They change.
But you got to have something.
We don't give our kids permission to dream anymore.
I've always thought happiness, if you want to define happiness, you know, whether or not you're happy, I believe that it's a progressive realization of a worthy ideal, you know, something that you're working towards. So when you have clear goals that you're moving towards, you're not only going to be more successful in your life, but you're going to be just generally happier, which is why I thought it was interesting. There was a huge study done, just got released yesterday. It's from an insurance company, Cigna, who reveals that loneliness is at absolutely epidemic levels in America. I got to take a quick little break, and we'll be back with to talk about that in just a minute here on the NaveTalk.net radio podcast.
You're listening to NativeTalk.net. We listen to the other guys. That's why we don't imitate them. Now, grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced.
Whoa, wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Or Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online at nativetalk.net and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Well, yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or Heart
well,
for History.
I finally did it. I opened a 401k.
What? Why? Just wait for the inheritance. We've definitely got a rich uncle somewhere. We're one call away from the winner's circle at the Derby, dinners with multiple forks, a vacation home in the country, using summer as a verb.
You don't actually think that, do you?
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs, the Colorado Society of CPAs, and the Ad Council.
Listening to the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. If life were a circus, we'd be the ringmaster. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. Message line, if you want to call up, drop us a line anytime, 970-278-5791, and visit us online at NativeTalk.net to download and listen to any of our past shows. We're continuing with Danelle Reed of the Puyallup Tribe, fellow tribal member, same tribe as I am. And she's a PhD in, what was it, clinical psychology, I think?
Yes.
Perfect. Now, have you seen this new Cigna study about loneliness?
I just pulled it up, actually, and I was starting to read it while you were on break.
Yeah. I couldn't believe.
I hadn't seen it until like 30 seconds ago.
And I saw the headline on USA Today, which said that millennials are lonelier than, you know, they're lonelier than anyone else. But that headline is misleading because when you pull up the research, we have an epidemic of loneliness. This is something that's affecting people all across the country. And they use this UCLA loneliness scale, which I read, and it was pretty amazing the kinds of things that they have on questions. Like, you know, I'm unhappy doing so many things alone. I've got nobody to talk to. I can't tolerate being so alone. I find myself waiting for people to call in right. As I read these and I you know, realize people are answering that that's happening to them on a regular basis, I'm sitting here going, get out more. Why can't you find friends? But apparently it's difficult for some folks, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why. Like, it shouldn't be that hard. All you got to do is, like, go find any club, any hobby, whatever it is you're interested in, there's somebody out there who shares that, you know? And I wonder, is it just like the video game culture? Like people are used to such a like instant gratification, like things should come easy, things should come simply. And the fact is, whatever hobby you want to get involved in, it's going to take work. It takes a long time and you don't get good at anything overnight, you know? So I don't know if people are just getting lazy.
I don't know. I just think that our society is definitely changing. The childhood that I had, it was like, the B word was a bad word in my, you couldn't use that word or you'd be
B word
scrubbing the ceiling. B is bored.
Oh,
so
right.
He said, I'm bored. So my mom would have us clean the garage or like I said, she's like, you know, if you said anything like that or, you know, or go outside and figure it out, you know, we would make mud pies and, you know, trace frogs and, our kids aren't doing that. They're, you know, they're on their gaming systems, shooting up people in fake wars, you know, or Candy Crush. And I don't play either of those games.
Well, that's okay sometimes, but it's when you get like into it, like all the time, you know, it's,
I know people who game for like all day.
That's ridiculous.
It's not healthy.
No.
I mean, I saw a really sad picture of a woman at an airport and she had a beautiful little baby, you know, infant, like couldn't walk baby who 100% relying on her mom. And the mom's got a screen 6 inches from her face and the baby's down on the floor going, let's, you know, nobody's interacting with this, like, and the mom's on a screen. To me, play with your kids. A perfect image of what's going wrong in our society.
And that's why we've got almost half of all Americans across all age groups reporting that they sometimes or always feel alone.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't even feel alone when I am alone because I always have something to do. I've got so many projects that if I'm alone and I have, quote unquote, nothing to do, I'm going to pull up, you know, and work on whatever project I've got going. I mean, I can, you know, look stuff up and I feel perfectly happy if I'm alone. I can go out in the backyard and, you know, work on something out there. And, you know, so if you're feeling alone, I think that's a problem.
Yeah.
Cause I wonder what you have going on in your life.
And again, I think this kind of goes to, you know, what are people exposed to as they're coming up? Because I'm sure a lot of people wish and desire to be able to be goal-directed and have that kind of clear path set out for them, but they haven't been shown how to do that. It hasn't been modeled for them. It hasn't been reinforced in any way, shape, or form in their life to date, let's say, for a young person, or even we have, you know, clients that are my age and who will come in and say, because we set goals in therapy. That's, you know, that's a piece of how you get better. And they're like, I don't even know how to do that. I mean, they don't know how to do that.
That's so incredible to me.
Well, but it happens in a greater percentage than you could imagine, because you obviously got really good training kind of coming up and you can fully appreciate the importance of goal setting. But so many people didn't and they don't get it. You know, so they've spent most of their life just kind of getting through and trying to get through, let's say, the next day or even the next hour. And they don't have, you know, the path wasn't forged for them.
You know, and that's always been my thought about substance abuse specifically, because in my life I've had, you know, we've got a huge opioid epidemic. People are hooked on these pills and stuff like that. And I had a procedure where the doctor prescribed me opioid pills, and I thought they were fantastic. I loved those things. They made me feel great. But when I didn't get that many. They gave me like 20 of the things, and they were gone within, you know, 2 weeks. And I had no desire or need to continue that, even though they did make me feel good, because I've got a whole lot of things going on in my life. And so I didn't feel the desire to go out there and seek those out elsewhere. And so people who are alcoholics, they're addicted to pills or other drugs, I feel like they're doing it because they don't like the life that they're in, that they're currently living. And so they're looking to escape that and kind of, you know, feel something else. Whereas I enjoy the life I'm living, and I don't want to escape it. So getting addicted to drugs isn't something that I've ever really struggled with, even when I find one that I really enjoy, you know? So if people had, you know, more hobbies and more friends, I mean, looking at this, where you've got a quarter of Americans who rarely or never feel like there are people who understand them. If you've got people who don't understand you, you're not going to be very happy. And so you're probably going to be somebody who could be swept up by that.
Right. But it's hard if you haven't been kind of, you know, challenged to do that up into your life at that point. And I think, you know, for some people, for folks who end up with having problems with alcohol or having problems with, you know, opiates or the like, a lot of the times they don't go into it saying I'm escaping. They go into it because with opiates, they're prescribed them. And it takes less than 8 days to become physically. So not even if there's absolutely, like, let's say you're perfect in your head, that you can form a physical addiction, and then your body's going to drive you to want more.
Oh, yeah.
That's at a survival level.
Just so after 2 weeks on those pills.
Your body's telling you, I need it, and you're going to go get it.
Yeah, I felt like I wanted it, but I didn't, like, want it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's kind of mind over matter, body over mind. They're all kind of connected. But a lot of folks, you know, and I actually have people in my own family system who have developed opiate addictions, and it was on accident. It happened because the doctor gave them 180 pills.
My God.
And they used them.
Well, if I had them, I might have used them too.
And then they were like, I need more. I need, you know, and so at 180 pills, you're 30 days in to what is now a 21-day full-blown physical addiction, and you don't even know it.
So, yeah, you know,
it kind of can happen that way. And the same with alcohol. You start off and it's socializing and you're, you know, maybe you have a little bit of social anxiety and it helps you relax and you're doing it only on the weekends. And then it turns into the weekends plus Sunday night. And then it turns into the weekends plus Sunday and Wednesday. And, you know, I mean, so it, it can totally happen accidental. And then you're dealing with, again, it's that stigma that keeps you from, like, maybe admitting to your spouse or your best friend, like, hey, I might be overusing some of this stuff, because what are they going to think?
You know? Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to a year of promoting the no stigma. I think it's so extremely important.
Well, you know, and that's a good thing. Obviously we shouldn't be stigmatizing it, but you also need to be able to admit if you've got a problem. You know, when I was in high school, I had anxiety issues, and I had, you know, I felt kind of lonely, because I would have answered this differently in high school than I would now, because I had a hard time, like, you know, connecting with people. But by looking at that situation and telling myself I'm here and I want to be over here, and I made a plan to get there. I understood that I was not where I wanted to be. And so I worked really hard to get the problems out of the way early, get the embarrassments and make the mistakes, because that's the only way that you're going to learn the right way to do it. You know, and now it's not so hard, but whereas back then it was more, you know. So you've got to have a plan of action and to admit that, hey, something's wrong. I'm not happy with where I am. I need to get to where I want to be. That's a goal.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, it's a goal. And, you know, I'd say the vast majority of young people, and even I'm Gen X, and then all the between the millennials and Gen X, a lot of us don't know how to do that, you know. We just don't. I learned it in grad school. So I was 25 when I started graduate school, and I got overwhelmed, you know, instantly when I came home with a car full of books and, you know, 8 syllabus. And I was like, and it, you know, it took me sharing that with my advisor. Like, I don't think I can do this. This is too overwhelming. I was seeing the big picture and getting overwhelmed by that. Mm-hmm. And they're like, let's scale that down, Danelle. And like, literally they took out the calendar for me and they're like, so if you have an exam, you know, this book is due on this Friday and you have an exam that Thursday, and you know, so literally we just started plugging in smaller goals than the getting through the semester, right? And then even backing up to like the day, how am I going to spend my day? Like my day was 7 o'clock, you know, get up and get ready. And then 8 o'clock I was at my department and 3 o'clock I was at my job, you know, I mean, but it, so it was laying out those steps that those mm-hmm. all seem doable.
Yeah. Take it in steps, just organize your day.
Goals, getting organized. But I was 25 years old when I had an adult who stopped, and I love my mother, you know, but she never stopped me and said, hey, how are you, know, how are you going to goal set for the rest of your life? I got it in grad school. Thank God, you know. And I, you know, my mom did the best that she could, but she didn't teach me how to goal set.
Yeah, I probably got lucky. My dad, when I was 17 years old, I graduated from high school, and he told me we don't allow bums in the house. And if I didn't have a job in 2 weeks, he was going to throw me out. And yeah. 2 weeks went by and I didn't have a job. And my dad's a house painter, so he put me to work painting houses with him. Told me I wasn't allowed to quit unless I had another job. So
there you go.
You know, and you just have to sometimes do the hard thing, because right. that's the only way that you're going to learn. If you think that life is going to be easy, life has never been easy, you know? It's not supposed to be easy. And if you think it is, that's why you're lonely, probably.
I don't know.
Because you think yeah. life should be just handed to you, and it won't
be. Well, yeah. I mean, I certainly heard people accuse millennials of that, you know. I don't know. Life's super complicated. But
well, and a lot of people say that because they're all hooked on the social media stuff. But interestingly, with this survey, social media use was not a significant predictor of loneliness. People who were very heavy users of social media had a loneliness score of 43, whereas people who weren't high users of it, they never use social media, is only 41. So the difference is minimal. I mean, this is an epidemic that spans all age groups, you know?
Yeah, so. I'm going to have to, I do have the study pulled up right here on my computer, so I will definitely have to read it. I think, you know, another really good, in terms of Mental Health Awareness Month, there is Mental Health America, which is, I think, the website you visited, and their health promotion message is for mind, for body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're putting out toolkits, you know, that basically promote how to live well. I mean, how cool, right? How
absolutely
how often should you exercise, you know? And 10 years ago, the mental health field was not talking about exercise. The mental health field wasn't talking about how nutrition affects your mental state.
This is important.
That all seems really ridiculous to me. I mean, I sat in a screen, this is way back in the day at Vanderbilt, and I had a patient who came in and she was complaining of anxiety and describing how she feels physically when anxiety starts coming on. And so I am assessing her nutrition, and she drank Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
And so I said, well, how much do you drink of Dr. Pepper? She goes, oh, like two or three like cups a day. I go, oh, okay. Well, how big are those cups? They were big gulps.
Oh, Lord.
So if you drink
that's
much
bad
sugar
for you.
And that much caffeine over the course of your waking 12 hours, you are going to feel anxious, because you have all of that stuff in your body is going to make you feel sick.
Absolutely.
It's going to tear your stomach up, which looks and feels like anxiety, you know. I mean, it's those things where I think, you know, I know my field is kind of catching up to, it's not just one thing, you know. A wellness wheel can be anywhere from, you know, back in the day, the Native American wellness wheel has 4 dimensions, mm-hmm. right? Mental, physical, spiritual, and relational. You, now we know wellness, if you're truly living kind of a well-balanced life, it's got 10 or 12 or 14 aspects of your life. You've got environmental health. You've got your working health or education health. You've got your family systems relation health, you know. So we're catching up to that.
And I think the important thing is that as, you know, the mental health field is catching up to these things, there are more opportunities for folks who are feeling lonely, experiencing depression, and struggling with, you know, any types of mental issues. There's help out there for them.
Yes.
So, and there's a lot of places that they can turn. And, you know, so I hope anybody who's struggling with this is not afraid to reach out and to get the help that they do need. All right, we got to, that's about all the time we got. So thank you guys for listening today. We'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. We'll see you guys next week.
You're listening to the nativetalk.net radio podcast. In the event we lose broadcast pressure, place headphones over ears and listen normally. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.